My little buttercup has the sweetest smile. Dear little buttercup, won't you stay a while? Come with me where moonbeams paint the sky, and you and I might linger in the sweet by and by.
In his new memoir, I must say, my life as a humble comedy legend, Martin Short tells the tale of how a showbiz-obsessed kid from Canada transformed himself into one of Hollywood's favorite funny men, known to his peers as the comedian's comedian. Martin Short talks about his early years in Toronto as a member of the improvisational troupe Second City to the all-American comic Big Time of Saturday Night Live, and memorable roles in movies such as Three Amigos and Father of the Bride. His memoir is now out in paperback. It is a great pleasure to welcome Martin Short back to the roundtable. Wonderful to have you back on the show, sir.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
As far as the reception of this and talking about your life since this book came out in hardcover, has that been overall a pleasurable experience?
Yes. You know, it's interesting. Before you even agree to do such a book, and I'd been asked for many years to do such a book, your instinct is to say, oh, no, absolutely not. For, you know, I'm too private, I'm too Canadian, and, you know, I don't want to talk about that story when that guy phoned me up, that famous guy at 4 in the morning drunk all the time. You know what I mean? And you'd think, well, I can't reveal things that are private. And then you kind of get into it and you realize, well, first of all, you don't have to talk about that person who's drunk at 3 in the morning. And secondly, you realize that your life is, if you've learned things from it, then what caused that education is kind of empowering, and you think maybe someone else could benefit from this book as well.
You write in the book, there are two chapters very early on, Marty with parents, Marty without parents. You were orphaned by the time you were 20. And I'm curious as to how much you think that had an impact on your path in life.
Well, I think it does, because, you know, loss or any major earthquake of an event in your life, you know, we always have a forked road at that moment. You can either become victimized by it or you become empowered by it. Because the reality is with loss, everyone's going to go through it. It's just hopefully you'll go through it when you're 78 or something. Right. And if you go through it young, I think you know, there is a yin for yang. It's horrifying, but you have knowledge about life that other 20-year-olds don't. If you're on stage and you want to put your hair up in a point, where some people might be afraid to do that, you say, well, I don't care. You know, you're a little bit looser with the so-called ramifications of minor things.
I mentioned in the introduction this idea of being a showbiz-obsessed kid. Give us an idea of that, of how it manifested itself for you as a child, of how you were obsessed with show business.
Oh, I used to, if I sat in the back of a bus, the back seat, you know, kind of an angled window, I pretend that I was in a private plane. I, you know, had a full fantasy world of myself as a star who had his own variety television show. I was 14, but it wasn't even on every week. It was on every other Tuesday with NBC, and that left time for my imaginary film career. So, I mean, it was, you know, an applause record, and there was even a point where my brother Michael spoke to my parents, and he said, you know, because I had a rocking chair in my room, and the arm kept breaking, I had a tube of glue. He said, you know, you cannot rule out the possibility he's sniffing glue up there, because this is not normal. You know, kids are playing road hockey out in front, and he's singing, you know, I Did It My Way. I mean, it doesn't make sense. But to me, it did.
Did comedy always enter into it, or was it singing? Was it the whole thing? Was it just show business?
I think it was the whole thing. I never saw myself as a comedian as much as an actor or performer, I guess, an entertainer, but not so much. Like, I never did stand-up comedian. I was never drawn. I think they're great stand-ups are our philosophers, you know. So I have great admiration, but it was nothing that I wanted to do. You know, when I was 12 years old, I wouldn't listen to Bob Newhart as much as I'd listen to Nichols and May and people improvising.
And I'm curious as to what you think your big break was, the first big break on those early days in Canada.
Well, I guess it was, you know, I was still in university and I auditioned for the show Godspell that every actor in Toronto wanted. It was going to be the big, big thing, run for a year, blah, blah, blah. And even the callback auditions had like 400 people. And they did it in groups all day. It was like American Idol. It kept getting whittled down. It got whittled down to 10 people, 10 unknowns, you know. And they were Gilda Radner and Andrea Martin and Eugene Levy and Victor Garber and myself. And as musical director was Paul Schaefer, who was at that time a student at U of T. But he'd come in and played piano for her, you know, for his girlfriend. And they said, well, we're not going to hire her, but who's that guy playing piano like no one does? And they hired him right away. So it was kind of a monumental first jump in. It was pretty spectacular first job.
And those are people who would stay with you for most of their lives and for your life, who you would have a connection to.
Well, I'm at my cottage in Canada. Paul and Eugene are coming up next week. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Andrea Martin was married to my brother-in-law. So she is I'm the uncle to her children, you know. I knew Catherine O'Hara since she was 17. Eugene and I were at university together. So, no, it's a long history.
And with that becomes more than just history. It's a friendship, but it is also, I assume, somewhat comforting when you are making a move and you're going to go on your career to come back with it, because they all had separate wonderful success.
Right, but I think what you just said a second ago is the actual truth. They're just really your friends.
Yes.
They just also happen to be famous. But their main gimmick is they're your friends.
But you worked with them, and I assume there is an enjoyment that comes with that of working with these wonderful people.
Oh, absolutely. When you work, because especially in comedy, it's all about ease. You know, you don't want to see a comedian sweat so much. Although Don Rickles sweated, I love that. But generally, it's the ease. You know, when you do a show, I do concerts all over, and when I come out, I become so aware it is not about if every joke lands. They just want to have a hang with you. They want to be loose with you.
Mm.
So that thing, you know, Steve Martin and I do concerts all over now. And our history is so long. We've made 5 films together, and we've been close friends for over 30 years. And that ease is palpable on stage.
How does that evening work? Is it you interviewing him? Is it him interviewing you? Or is it just a conversation?
No, it's not even that. It started off as a conversation the first time we did it. We closed the Just for Laughs Comedy Festival in Chicago a few years ago. And then we had so much fun, we thought, but then as we've done it, we've added more, you know, the best elements of my show and the best elements of his show. He has the Steep Canyon Rangers with him. So it's a lot of, we do a puppet piece together where I'm his marionette. There's a lot of different things, elements, and, you know, music and variety. And, of course, we just did in San Antonio 2 weeks ago, and Dave Letterman showed up. So it's kind of like a probably more Rat Pack than conversation, I guess.
So that, of course, that video went viral when Dave came out and did a top 10 list on Donald Trump.
Take a look at the list I have here tonight. Interesting facts about Donald Trump. Okay, here we go. Number 10. That thing on his head was the gopher in Caddyshack.
Did you invite him? Was he in the area? How did that happen?
No, he was not in the area. He had always said that he wanted to see the show, and we said, you should come up to San Antonio. I didn't think he'd do it, and he said, sure, I'd love to. And there he showed up in the afternoon, and we ended up doing about 25 minutes together because he did the top 10 list. But then we sit down and talk, and he was fantastic, so loose and so funny.
Do you think he will stay retired, or do you just feel that he so enjoys that he will pop up in some other venue?
I actually have no idea, but if he stayed retired, it would be a huge loss, because his voice is so specific, and it's like having a really smart friend who will say things to you that you'll think about, and his stances will be based on thought and its cleverness, and it's so funny. And you just, that voice shouldn't go away.
When you went on this show for the last time, and obviously Paul Shaver is there, a person that you've worked with for decades and have known for decades, and is a friend, as you mentioned, and there everything seemed to be so comfortable. What was that like?
Well, it was very, it was always comfortable. It's always comfortable. You always worried the most about doing Dave's show because it meant the most. Like if you bombed on Dave's show, you'd just feel horrible.
Mm.
You bombed on other shows, you sometimes go, well, you know, it happens. But you don't want to screw up with Dave because everyone had such admiration for Dave. And so, you know, you would prepare. I would always prepare pretty well in advance, and then you'd end up hitting about 30% of what you'd prepared. But the numbers I did with Paul, I would do each show, and I mean, I think I'd been on the show over 60 times or something. So it was, I'd done a lot of numbers with Paul. So to do the last number and be in rehearsal, it was this, you kept being aware, oh my God, this is the last time we're going to do this, because we'd been doing it for 33 years.
When you said a moment ago that it's people, when they come to see you, that it's that idea of they want to hang. So what is bombing to you? If you go out and can you feel it immediately?
Well, I mean, sometimes, you know, bombing to me is really not about not, you know, winning the audience over, because maybe you don't, if you met them, you wouldn't want to win them over. You know, it's conceivable. But bombing to me is not being prepared. You know, going out and saying, oh, I'll just wing this show. I don't have time to prepare for it, or I don't have time to focus on it. And then it doesn't go well, that's bombing to me.
When you look at doing something, you recently did Broadway and back to Broadway, and were
right.
in the wonderful It's Only a Play. Is that fun for you, especially in a role that you step into? Is that still enjoyable?
Oh, completely. Yes, absolutely. It was, but it was really enjoyable because of the cast. Because the back of the word hang, the hang was so much fun. You know, Matthew Broderick is hilarious. And he's an old friend of mine. And Stockard Channing and Murray Abraham and Micah Stock, they were just spectacular. Katie Finneran, just such great, great people and so much fun to be with. And then the play is great. And then you go out afterwards and you go to Orso and you have a dinner and you have a glass of wine and you're on Broadway. It's fantastic.
Did you feel that same way when it was just your show, when it was Fame Becomes?
Well, you know,
Me?
This was more fun because, first of all, I had an understudy. And I never missed a show, and I tend not to miss shows, but at least knowing that you could takes a little pressure off. When you're doing your own show, Fame Becomes Me, Martin Short, it's hard to phone in sick, you know.
Right.
So, and also musicals are different because what I just did in New York was a play, but musicals are, you know, you live with your voice and you're afraid to speak in the morning for fear of what might come out because you have to sing and shout. And if it's, you know, if it's not good, you have to, you know, head to the doctors or something.
Did you always want? This is sort of being back into the bus, looking out the window, and being on the private plane. Did you always imagine that part of that? Because when you're singing, it is that so reminiscent of Sinatra.
It is bizarre. I don't really think about it because it's just been a pattern of my life. But if I do a distance from it, it is pretty bizarre, you know, that these influences still influence me, or that I, you know, became this thing that I, at 14, thought was a fantasy world.
When you go out, you're doing these shows with Steve Martin. I assume you'll be doing more of these.
Yes.
And after that, what do you still want to accomplish in the immediate future?
I'm 65 years old, so I could easily just retire. You know, Cary Grant retired at 65. I thought it was so hip. You know, the exit's as hip as the entrance, ultimately. But I still enjoy the eclectic nature of doing a lot of different things. You know, last year, in a school year, I always considered September to the end of June. That's how I like to work. But, you know, I did a TV series, Mulaney. I launched a book. I did a million talk shows for that book. I opened a movie, Inherent Vice, and then I did a Broadway show. So, and I also did concerts with Steve throughout. So you go, I like that year. I mean, that's maybe a little too busy, but it's a really interesting year. So as long as it's just interesting like that, I'd want to keep doing it. But I don't think I have anything. I think my epitaph's been written at this point.
So it's not saying, oh, you know, I want to do three more movies, or I'd really like to work with this person, or I'd love to just get into a situation comedy that lands and I can be there for a while.
No, none of those scenarios seem perfect. I don't know if I want to be anywhere for a while. You know, I just like doing a three-month run of Broadway was great. Doing, you know, 10 shows of that, 4 shows of this, that's fun. To not have the flexibility to know you're tied down, nah, I don't know. I don't really want that now. I've got the rent covered.
Well, the name of the book is Martin Short, I Must Say, My Life as a Humble Comedy Legend. Martin Short, it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Great pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Again, Martin Short's new book is I Must Say, My Life as a Humble Comedy Legend. It is published by Harper, out in paperback. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.